You're on, Jeff. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Jeff S. I'm a compulsive overeater from South Jersey, and I appreciate the opportunity to share. Thank you, Mikey, for asking me to come here. Never been to this meeting. I'll give you my basic statistics qualification, so to speak. I've been in OA for 35 years. The last 11 years, I've been abstinent, maintaining 100-pound weight loss, and I am a relapse survivor. I don't say that necessarily proudly, but I do say that as part of my story. Every time I say it, I think of the TV shows, the Survivor TV shows, where people get kicked off the island. You know, you're a survivor, and they kick you off, or you leave the island. Well, I've never left the island since being in OA. I've always come back, even in relapse, because I knew things could get a lot worse if I left the island, the OA island. I'll give you a brief history of my compulsive eating. I can remember as an 8-year-old eating more slices, more scoops than my father. And I'm a binge eater, so that means I would eat the stuff very quickly and then get sick. Did that from the age of 7 and 8 up until I came into OA. And basically, the foods I would eat, we all know what many of us have the addiction to: sugar-laden foods, processed foods, starchy, other kinds of starchy foods, high-fat content foods. I even include crunchy foods. And I can binge on crunchy foods. Some of the breakfast cereals, they're great. And I was crazy for certain other ones. As a kid, I have a feeling, I always get into this analysis. Well, what caused this? Well, I don't even think of that. I'm a compulsive overthinker. And so I've thought this enough, and I can't come up with a solution. It could be hereditary. Both my parents smoked cigarettes. My father, I guess because he smoked, he did not gain weight. I never smoked cigarettes. My mother drank. I never drank. So this was my way of coping with life. That's my theme. From a very early age, I used food to cope with my life. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if anything made me anxious, I, without even thinking, would eat foods that would change my mood. So food definitely would change my mood. And I'm a poet, and I didn't know it. And that's the way it was up until the program. Using food to feel better, to change my new mood. I had no spirituality when I came into program. I was pretty much agnostic. My higher power, I had a higher power. His name was Jeff. I was the higher power. What that meant was I needed to figure out everything myself. I was a smart guy, and I could do it. I'll figure out everything myself until I couldn't, until my life became unmanageable trying to do that. And as a compulsive overthinker, I would analyze stuff to the nth degree. There was a part of me that thought doing that would prevent things from happening because I'd think of the worst case scenarios with every situation. I had no faith. It's really what the bottom line was. I had no faith in a higher power. So I had the burden of having to solve all my problems by myself, mostly through overthinking. When I came into OA, I lived about a half a block from a little strip mall. And this was the ideal place for a food addict. This little strip mall had a pizza place, it had a 7-Eleven, and it had a Chinese restaurant. So what else would I need in life, right? I every day, usually after work, I would go get the stuff and binge. I'd bring it home and I would binge and feel sick and then do it again. And I do believe that there is a physical addiction to this disease many of us have. We're not all the same. We're not all addicted the same. This is not like alcohol, where if you're an alcoholic, you stay away from alcohol. If you're a compulsive overeater, you're a food addict, well, you have to kind of figure out for yourself what your triggering foods and ingredients are. A lot of times for many of us, it's the same. But despite that fact that I figured it out early on, that doesn't mean I had long-term abstinence right away. when I first figured it out, I think I read a book on food addiction. I was in program and I became abstinent. And I had about 3 years of good abstinence when I came in. And then, and I went to meetings regularly. I always went to meetings. Fellowship is a big part of this program for me. But I didn't really work the steps on a daily basis. So my spiritual fitness was not the best. You know, I eventually belonged to step writing groups, big book groups, you name it, with men, with mixed groups. And this might sound out of poor taste, but it was like an inoculation, a vaccine. It lasts only for a certain period of time, and then you got to get another one. Well, I figured I was good to go after I was in a big book study for like 6 weeks or, 6 months or however long it was. And the addiction always came back. That mental obsession that we read about in the big book, it always came back. And I'd go into relapse. That's not a coincidence that I would go into relapse. And that lasted. I kept doing that for a number of years in program. As I said, I've been in program for 35 years. And I have to say, probably the first half of my time in program, that's what I was doing. Year of relapse, 6 months, year of recovery, or not relapsing, not eating. Did that. And I was frustrated. I never left, though. And then about 12 years ago, I attended this one big book weekend. A guy from Canada came down for the South Jersey Intergroup. And I had heard him once before, but it didn't really sink in. And his message was, you have to do this work every day. And I thought, well, work? Work? I got to do work? That's a dirty word for me, work. I'm retired. But what he meant by that was, you have to do the maintenance steps every day. And it's basically what we all know. It's doing a daily inventory. It is prayer and meditation. And then more importantly, it's doing service. Now, I inherently have a resistance to effort, which I otherwise call laziness. And so I avoided doing this work. Sometimes it was hard for me to do some of it. I'm kind of an ADD-ish person and don't pay attention that well. But it reached the point where I knew I had to do something different. And I started to do this stuff. So what have I been doing for the last 12 years that I've been abstinent? Well, I'll tell you in specifics. One, I do a written daily inventory. I don't do it perfectly. I use the Region 7 journal, which I think is an excellent journal. I answer the questions, about my day. Was I inherently lazy that day? No, it doesn't ask that. It asks, what made you anxious? What made you fearful? It asks questions about what what you feel good about. What are you afraid of? Something make you fearful that day? Did you harm anyone? Do you need to make an amends? That's all on that checklist for the Region 7 journal. And I've been using it for years. Unfortunately, they only give you enough pages for like 3 months. So you have to keep buying it. It's not a scam, but it's the kind of thing where if you want to do it in writing, I mean, there's a lot of other, journals out there you can use that have the same questions. But I try and answer those questions every day. And what I believe is it helps me deal with resentments and things that are bothering me from festering. If I do it in writing, I have to do it in writing. I know people can do it in their heads. I can't do it in my head. I'm too distractible. If I try and do that in my head, I'm in trouble. I'm not going to do it right. If there's a way of doing it right, I'm just not going to do it. And so I do that as one main thing. Of course, if I've harmed somebody, I apologize right away. And that's hard. You know, sometimes I have to be humble. If someone has, I guess, part of my French pissed me off, I got to deal with that right away. So I do that inventory. Some days I am resistant to doing it or I get distracted, but I always get back to it. There's a part of me that sometimes, not often, I'll think to myself, well, I got this. It's kind of an arrogance. I don't have to do it today. I can do it maybe, you know, in a couple of days, the inventory. And then I'm in trouble because not doing it today leads to not doing it tomorrow. And I don't do it perfectly. I also do prayer and meditation. Several years ago, I went to that OA big book. No, it wasn't a big book. It was an OA retreat in Malvern, Pennsylvania. And they handed out at the retreat these little prayer cards that had all the major big book prayers. And I don't know why, but at some point I started to look at that and started to say them to myself. But I started doing it in a different way because, again, if it's a question of just reading it, that's a homework assignment. If it's a question of meditating on the prayers, that's different. So I try and meditate on each of the major prayers, like the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, ninth step prayer, 11th step prayer. And so what that means is I kind of break it down when I'm reading it so I can slow myself down and get the meaning of those prayers. So I read them slowly. And that helps because I consider it meditation to read those prayers. For instance, like the third step prayer for me is mostly about self-absorption and self-will, wanting my way, giving up my will, my obsession with my problems so that I can be of more service to others. And I try and focus on that. Same thing with the seventh step prayer. The punchline is usually the same. You know, we deal with our defects so that we can be of more usefulness to others. So the prayers are important to me. I can't say I always get something every time I read them, but more often than not, I will get something out of reading those prayers. And I try and read them every day. Of course, again, I have the time. I don't have any excuses not to do the work anymore. You know, I was working and I always had excuses. You know, doing this work also keeps me on top of my defects. Like I'm going to know which defects have become inflamed. And I have my own greatest hits of defects that I'm looking at a lot, whether it's codependency, being controlling, negative thinking, dogmatic, judgmental. I have a whole list that I, you know, it's almost like my own personal defect checklist that I go through. And then finally, the last thing I'd like to talk about, which I think is has been the key to my abstinence, is step 12, carrying the message, helping others, doing service. First several years in program, I didn't do much. I might go in and help put the chairs up, but that was about it. I think carrying the message is the key. And that can be done in various ways. I think what's helped me the most is being a sponsor. And I get more out of sponsoring than I think my sponsees would realize. Certainly keeps me connected to the program. I relearn stuff that I've read on my, you know, with other people. And I really do believe in the AA slogan, in order to keep it, you got to give it away. So I have a number of sponsees, and I'm not a very hard sponsor. Like I have trouble firing anybody. I really, and that's kind of funny because in my career, I was the guy who would fire people. That was my job, basically. In labor relations. But I have to tell you, since I've been doing a lot of sponsoring, my program has probably been the strongest. But even if someone can't sponsor, they can make those damn phone calls. Thank you, Mikey. I'm going to be actually right on time. And so I look at making the phone calls as really helpful and almost the same kind of service. Call somebody who is, missing in action. Call somebody who is, struggling. And I think that's important to do that. And I learn an awful lot by talking to people. I really do. And I've done other service over the years, for the South Jersey Intergroup. I've been the chair of the intergroup. I've done some region work. I've certainly had held positions on committees. I took a break for a while because of health problems, but I'm going to pick up doing the 12 step within work again. I used to do outreach. Mikey and I used to do outreach together. But I'm going to do 12 step within work. And that helps me stay connected to my inner group and the people in the room. Let's see. And I'll say this, I don't do this program perfectly. I don't try and do it perfectly. If I did, I'd be driving myself nuts. And I don't When, if I have a slip, and I've had slips over the years, I'm not going to deny I've had slips. I don't get the efforts. I don't. I just start right there, and I just let it go. I know a lot of people, they try and do this perfectly, and when they have a slip, they really beat themselves up, and then they're in relapse for a long time. And I did that originally. I don't do that anymore. And then one final thing I'll say about service, and a few of you know, in my retirement years, I've developed a hobby of making recovery craft items out of wood, wooden recovery craft items. I put slogans and sayings, big book reading writings on coasters, boards, plaques, you name it, small mirrors, and I just give them away. I was just at the World Convention. I gave away like 300 things. So if anybody wants a free coaster or a free craft item, just give, I'll give, I'll put my text in the under my name, and you can send me your address. But that's something I like doing. It's a kind of a creative outlet for me to make these things. I create the photos that I put on the let's say God box. And I mail them out. And I think that's about it. Thanks for letting me share. Appreciate it.